The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to How to Survive. We're here to get you through the stuff that can kill you.
Oh, you mean like bear attacks and earthquakes and fires?
Totally. And the stuff that makes you wish you were dead.
Yeah, like having your heart broken or peeing your pants or peeing your pants a second time.
Check, check, check.
Yeah. We should just play the music.
Yeah.
Ground is shaking under our feet. Mountains on fire, flooding in the street. Can't breathe the air, can't fight the feeling. Goblin down, Xanax ain't the way to be dealing. Gotta do better than just getting high. We gotta stick together if we're gonna survive. Ooh, how to survive.
Welcome to How to Survive. I'm Danielle Koenig.
I'm Christine Kimmel.
We did it without a hitch that time.
You know what? I'm proud of us.
We know who each other are.
We know our own names.
Yeah. What is your middle name again?
It's Anne.
I knew I was going to say Christine.
Anne with an Anne. E.
Oh, I think Anne should have an E.
I do too.
My mom's middle name is Anne, and I don't think it has an E. Maybe it's like a Jewish versus Gentile thing.
It's not too late to add one. You know?
Okay. All right. My middle name's Beth.
Which I adore.
Yeah, I don't like it.
We've covered this.
I know. It's so, we're already repeating ourselves, and it's only episode
8? 9?
14?
Oh, okay, yeah. Double what I said. I'm admiring your necklace. Is that new?
Thanks. No, but you do ask me that every time.
Oh, my God. What's wrong with us?
One is a necklace that's doubled over, and one is a single necklace, and they're all the same. I try to get on the chain link gold necklace
trend.
Yeah, I probably did it wrong.
No, you're on it.
Am I on it?
Danielle.
Yeah.
Hello, look.
Look, we both have red nails today.
Oh my God, we're winning.
I know, we are.
I think it works for us.
I think so too. I went to a new place and didn't tell me they only took cash until I got there, and then I had to go run out and get cash. But they were very nice.
I did my own nails.
What?
Yeah. I did my own
nails. You just blew me away.
Really?
I cannot do my own nails.
You know what? Where I grew up, you didn't go get your nails done.
Oh, so well, I didn't go get my
nails. You had to learn how to do your own nails if you wanted to do your nails.
Yeah, I just didn't do my nails when I was a kid. That would have been too like feminine and like admitting I was trying or something.
Okay, so that wasn't cool.
It wasn't about cool. No, it wasn't about cool.
Okay.
So I always see these movies that take place in the 80s, and there's always like one kid who doesn't fit in, one girl who's like ugly or just kind of like lame, and she tries and tries and tries to fit in.
Okay.
And does her hair and does the, I mean, it doesn't have to be the 80s, it could be any era. But I didn't approach it that way because I was like, that would be embarrassing because I would be a fraud if I was trying to look trendy in any way.
Okay.
It wasn't that I looked down on those girls or thought that I was cool. I wasn't cool at all. It was kind of the opposite. I was just like, that's embarrassing.
Okay.
Like, I won't pull this off right, so it'll just be embarrassing to try.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I didn't have nails or, like, brushed hair. I told you last week, right, that when the woman at school, grade school, would check me for lice,
yeah,
she'd be like, you don't have lice, but you really should wash your hair more often.
But that's grade school. I feel like by high school, I feel like I've seen pictures of you and you were very cute.
I had a style in high school, yes. And also I went to an arts high school, so
So you could be, you didn't have to,
I didn't have to like follow a particular thing.
Your own thing was your thing.
Should we get into today's topic?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So I think people have been clamoring for this, and by people I mean me. But this is how to survive a plane crash.
Well, I want to know because I don't want to perish in a plane crash.
So do you get scared on the plane?
I used to have very big plane fears.
Yeah.
And now not as much.
Oh, what changed? That's interesting.
You know what I think really changed for me is having kids. Yeah. I thought, you know what? I don't want them to see me being afraid because then they're going to be afraid. So I kind of faked it. And then...
Did you fake it till you made it?
I did. I faked it till I
made it. Yeah.
And the other thing is, I had this realization at some point, I think when I was gripping the arms, and just like kind of clenching my teeth and realizing that like me having constant fear and paying attention to every sound and constantly checking what the flight attendants were doing and listening for everything. I was like, none of that's going to affect if the plane crashes or not.
So you used logic and you somehow, that's amazing. I wish I could do that.
It's not going to make a difference. Like me worrying isn't going to make any difference. So I can either freak out or I could just kind of stop doing that.
Right. But learning these things will make a difference.
Let's do it.
So first I'm just going to tell you a couple facts.
Can I ask you a question before we start? I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes. No.
What's your anxiety level around flying?
I don't have an anxiety level around flying at all.
And have you ever?
No, I think I might have a little one now.
Okay.
Sort of the opposite with like I'm with my son and like I do get maybe a little bit scared like something could happen. Also, I read a novel where everyone dies but the kid. Then he has to live with it. I can't remember what it's called, but it was really good. When I was a kid, I was like, oh my God, I love flying. It's so much fun. Like, it was the best. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, it's not, I don't have a great anxiety, but yeah, it's gotten a little more since I've become a mom.
Interesting. Yeah. We had opposite experiences. I know. Okay.
Okay, over the last 5 years, there have been an average of 14 fatal accidents for commercial passenger and cargo planes, resulting in 340 deaths annually. So that's really nothing. 340 deaths a year.
With all the
flights. The United States has not had a fatal U.S. passenger airline crash since February of 2009.
Okay.
And one fatality due to a U.S. passenger airline accident in that period. So the U.S. has had one death since 2009.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. So it's not super, you know, common. This is not something you're going to have to deal with all the time. But, you know, there are ways to deal with it if it does happen. Guess where my majority of my research is from?
The Art of Manliness?
It is. I think my computer just now thinks I'm a man.
And you like that website, clearly.
it just brings it up.
Yeah.
Automatically. I'm not kidding. I went to other sites, but this just seems to have the best information.
Okay.
I just like it.
Good job, Art of Manliness.
Yes. In a report, and I mean, I have to take out like the broad jokes, you know, like by broad, I mean like And then the old, you know, the old ball and chain. I mean, they don't really say that, but they almost say that.
Oh, that's
that
really
stuff
funny.
I dig out.
Oh, good. Thank you.
In a report analyzing airline accidents from 1983 to 2000, the National Transportation Safety Board found that the survival rate of crashes was 95.7%.
Whoa, wait. I gotta. So you're saying
Your chance of survival
if you're in a plane crash.
Yes.
Is 95%.
Yes.
So I'm going to think about that for a second, because if I am in a plane and it starts to nosedive or it has engine trouble or the things come down, and I have to stick it on my face.
Right.
The oxygen masks.
The things.
I can take comfort in knowing I have a 95% chance of survival.
Yeah.
95%. Those are pretty good odds.
Huge.
Okay.
Okay.
That's very comforting.
So they go on. Sure, there are some accidents where everyone or nearly everyone died.
Yes.
But those are much rarer than you'd guess based on what you see in the news. The NTSB found that even in serious accidents where fire and substantial damage occurred, 76.6% of passengers still survived, even when there's like a fire.
Wow.
Combine those stats with the relative rarity of airplane accidents even happening in the first place, and you can see that flying is actually the safest form of transportation, which is something that, you know, has been drilled into us since we were little kids. But it's important to take note of another interesting tidbit that the FAA and NTSB found in their research on plane crashes. 40% of fatalities that did occur happened in crashes that were survivable.
Oh.
So listen up.
Okay, I'm. You've got all of my attention.
Close to half of all airplane crash fatalities might have been prevented had passengers taken proper action. If you've survived the crash landing, you have a pretty good chance of getting out of the airplane alive, but you have 90 seconds to do so.
Oh, it's that time thing.
Yes, it's that time thing. You see, the thing that kills most passengers in a plane crash isn't the actual impact. So this is interesting to me. It's the fire that typically engulfs the plane afterwards.
Okay.
So you're going crash, crash, crash. You're zooming in on the ground, crash, crash, crash. You're okay.
It's a lot of crashes.
Think about like three commercial lengths, got that much time to get out. I speak in TV terms because I'm used to talking to my son.
Well, no.
Who, when he says, ugh, how long is this going to take? And I'm like, two Arrested Developments. Or like,
how long is this root canal?
Yeah.
It's a Cheers episode. And
without commercials. Now we're watching Fargo season two, and it's really
which
good.
Which one is that?
Okay, it's the one with Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, that's a good
Jesse
one.
Jesse Plemons. It's
that
fantastic.
One's really good. That's I think where they met, and then
it is. I just found that out, and they're like a couple, and they've got babies. Mm-hmm, they got two babies.
That's a dark one.
Yeah, we're really digging it. And I'll think of his name in a second. Bokeem Woodbine is a fantastic actor, who I was not aware of before this, even though I think I know his name. Okay, so folks may be surprised they survive the impact and become complacent about other dangers. People vastly underestimate how quickly a fire can spread and consume an airplane.
Yes.
Surveys show that most people think they actually have 30 minutes to get out of a burning plane.
What are they doing? Texting their parents?
I don't know.
Get off the plane.
They're Googling what to do in case
they're
crash.
On the art of manliness.
Exactly. And then they're like, 90 seconds? What? The reality is that it takes, on average, just 90 seconds for a fire to burn through the plane's aluminum fuselage and consume everything and everyone
on it. Yeah,
those
seats, they're all like polyester.
Yes. Oh, that's a good point.
Fast.
Oh, we're going to get to that later.
I can't
about
wait.
Fabric. The FAA has rigorously studied and crunched the numbers on airplane crash survivors, as well as tested nearly 2,500 people in simulated evacuations to find out the type of person who typically survives.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the results. Young, slender men have the best odds of surviving a plane crash.
Gavin. Garrett.
It was going to happen sooner or later.
Who's Gavin?
The garden squirrel himself, Gavin. Poor Garen. Is that, I know you get your name butchered a lot. Is that a new one or have you gotten Gavin before?
I don't often get Gavin.
Yeah. But you have
but
gotten.
With the absolute just certainty of which you shouted that out.
It's funny because I've never ever called you Gavin before.
No, you've never gotten my name wrong.
No.
Never. So it's
she's only going to get it wrong from now on. It's going to be a different wrong name.
Be a running
but
gag.
The thing, in my defense, I was
you have
seeing
a dumb
you.
Name.
I was seeing you as a young, slim man who's going to survive a plane crash.
Yes, that, see, I appreciate that. Yes.
I pictured Kieran Culkin. That's my young, slim man in my head.
Guess who I just saw as a very little, tiny boy? Kieran Culkin.
In
Home Alone 2.
Yeah, he talked about that when he hosted SNL, that he has a little part in
it. He's wearing these giant glasses. Uh-huh. It's very cute.
Oh, yeah.
He's Fuller, right? Isn't that the character? He's the one who pees the bed in the attic, and that's why Kevin doesn't want to go up there?
He's the, yeah, he's, yeah. The, he's the cousin who...
Oh, that's like... Yeah, I remember seeing him when he was little.
Yeah.
Okay, so the FAA has found that differences in age, gender, and girth... Yeah, you do your own joke there. Account for... It would be a dick joke, just in case people didn't get that.
Got it.
When you're writing your own joke, make it a dick joke. Account for 31% of the difference between people's evacuation times. Escaping a plane crash requires you to maneuver quickly through narrow aisles with luggage and wreckage strewn about. So I don't know with my... wide flat ass that I've talked about before how well I'm doing with this.
I'm pretty sure that you can still fit
because I can
shimmy Danielle's in a seat so you're gonna be okay.
I don't know. I mean, I think if I move sideways I'm fine.
I think I'm built like a billboard. I think you're size zero to two body is still gonna be just fine.
Well, I know, but what if my body dysmorphia gets in the way and I freeze?
Your body dysmorphia is what's... I'm so big, I'll never squeeze through.
Okay. So yeah. So think about this. You have to move around thrown luggage.
Yeah.
You know, a cart.
Yes.
I mean, it's scary. You may even have to throw blockages out of your way. Okay. So then I don't know if Kieran Culkin's going to do well because I don't know if he's got muscles. He seems pretty puny.
He's puny, but he also seems like firm.
Yeah, so he might be able. Garen, do you think you can throw luggage out of your way? I don't know.
No.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely not.
Maybe you could throw Kieran Culkin out of your way.
That might be more.
Right. Befriend someone muscular
and
on
skinny.
Every flight.
You need like a Julianne. What was that woman's name from You're So Fat? What's it called?
Julianne.
The Big Fat Loser?
It's not Moore. Nicholson? Michelson. Michaels. Julianne Michaels?
Julianne Michaels. Is that the woman from Biggest Loser?
Yeah.
Yeah, you need someone like that. You may even have to throw a blockage out of... Okay, yeah. You then have to slip through an emergency exit that may only be 20 inches wide.
Yeah, they're small, right?
Yeah. Holdups at the exit due to passengers having trouble deplaning has caused many unnecessary deaths. In a runway collision that occurred in 1991, investigators found the charred remains of 10 passengers lined up in the aisle waiting to leave the wing exit. Folks who froze up and had trouble squeezing through the exit had created a fatal bottleneck.
Those fuckers.
So I'm saying if there is a bigger person in front of you, just help them. Just push them like you're like Winnie the Pooh through a hole in the wall.
You gotta just shove them.
Just kick them out.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta help. Okay, fly in bigger planes if possible. If you have the choice between flying in a puddle jumper or a 737, choose the 737. According to FAA investigations, larger planes have more energy absorption in a crash, which means you're subjected to less deadly force. So that makes sense. It's more mass, so it's spread over a larger area. Not mass, area is what I meant. And may equate to a better survival rate. Consider flying on South... This is weird. Consider flying on Southwest... for no other reason, I mean,
yes.
This has got to be the only article that's ever said consider flying on Southwest, whose fleet consists solely of 737s, and avoid regional carriers when possible. Not only are their planes smaller, they have an accidents and incidence rate double that of national carriers, and their pilots are often less experienced and overworked.
So they're like, don't fly on airlines you haven't heard of, essentially.
Basically, right. Note that national airlines frequently use a regional carrier for some of the routes that fly under their name. So,
oh,
you know,
you can get tricked.
Yeah, I guess you just have to check the plane size.
And make sure it's a 737.
Yeah, at least a 737. I mean, if you can endure the jokes, does Southwest still do, are they still jokey in their presentations?
I haven't flown on Southwest in a long time.
Me neither.
I don't really know.
I don't
either. I'm just not going where their routes.
Right.
I don't know.
Where to sit. According to the folks who dedicate their lives to studying plane crashes, the statistics are inconclusive because every plane crash is different. Sure, many crashes are nose first, thus making the back of the plane safer, because they'll always tell you to sit in the back of the plane. Mm-hmm. But there are some that have happened tail first or wing first. You just don't know what kind of crash you'll be in. Instead of worrying about whether your seat is near the back, focus on finding a seat near an exit.
Mm-hmm.
According to researcher Ed Galea, those who survive a plane crash typically only have to move an average of 5 rows to escape. So beyond 5 rows, the chance of getting out alive decreases.
Okay.
So that's what you're looking for.
Book your seat near an exit. Near an exit,
yeah. The best seat to have is in the exit row, as you'd be the first one out should you need to exit. If you can't snag that seat, go for the aisle. You have 64% chance of survival compared to the 58% chance you'd have sitting in a window seat. Also, avoid bulkhead rows. Sure, you have more leg room, but the walls don't give as much as seats do when you collide with them in a crash.
Bulkhead rows. I don't.
The ones where it's not a seat in front of you, it's like the wall of the plane.
So between first class and
yeah.
the rest of you dummies?
Yeah. When we dummies start,
yes.
there's an area
where that where, wall is.
Yeah, it's
but
like
but often, the thing is that I'm confused about is often that's also where the exit is.
It is?
I think so.
I haven't been on a plane in a long time. I don't remember. But they're saying
okay, they're saying
it doesn't give
that.
As much
okay.
give as like a cushion of a
seat.
Seat, even okay. though those seats are hard as rocks.
Okay.
Overcome the normalcy bias.
Okay.
With an action plan.
Explain that to me, please.
Do you think I'm not going to explain it to you?
I hope you do.
The Normalcy Bias is a new sitcom coming out on NBC about a kid who finds themselves trapped in a world where no one else is autistic. I made that whole thing up.
Thank you.
The Normalcy Bias.
I'm
going
to watch it.
Causes our brains to assume that things will be predictable and normal all the time.
Oh.
When yeah. things aren't normal, it takes our brain a long time to process this. I don't think you probably have the normalcy bias, but I might have the
oh,
normalcy bias.
Oh, I'm constantly
bias.
Assuming things
you
are
going to
go wrong.
You assume things are going
yeah.
right. Instead of springing to action when something unexpected happens, our brain kind of shrugs and figures that what is going on can't be so bad because truly bad events are so out of the ordinary.
Yes.
So it's a form of
coping?
Yeah, exactly. Investigators have discovered that normalcy bias has caused many unnecessary deaths in plane crashes. Instead of taking immediate action after a crash, people sort of mill around.
Oh, my God. What are they at, a cocktail party? Jesus, get off your ass.
Many will even start looking for their carry-on luggage before getting to the exit.
No, leave it. You don't need your toothbrush.
I'm going to give you a little example of when this normalcy bias thing kicked in.
Okay, good.
And when it didn't kick in. Normalcy bias manifested itself in dramatic fashion during a plane collision in 1977 that killed 583 people.
Oh, my goodness.
People still dressed for the airplane in 1977, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Probably looked. So those dead people were at least like well put together.
They were
flip-flops in that
pile. They were in heels, polyester pantsuits.
Yes.
Nice earrings.
Oh, that's the other great thing about.
Heavy ones, danglies.
Yes. That's the other great thing about Fargo season 2. Mm-hmm. It takes place in 1979. So the outfits are fantastic. Okay. So, killed 583 people, the worst aircraft disaster in history. Two 747 jumbo jets collided with each other just above the runway on the small island of Tenerife, part of the Canary Islands off of Morocco. After the collision, one jet tumbled to the ground and exploded, killing all 248 passengers on board. The other jet crash landed but didn't explode. The collision sheared away the top of the jet and flames began to take over the aircraft. Passengers who survived the initial collision could have escaped unharmed, but they had to act fast. Paul Heck, a passenger on the burning plane, who was 65,
mm-hmm.
by the way, sprung to action.
Good job, Paul.
He unbuckled his seatbelt, grabbed his wife's hand, and hightailed it to the nearest exit. They, along with 68 other passengers, survived while 328 died.
Oh, my Jeez.
In an interview after the disaster, Mr. Heck noted how most people just sat in their seats, acting like everything was fine, even after colliding with another plane the cabin filled with smoke.
Oh, my God.
Researchers believe that passengers had a little over a minute to escape before being consumed by the flames and are convinced that if more people had taken immediate action instead of remaining in their seats, pretending like things were okay, the survival rate would have been much, much
higher.
They
were just waiting probably for the captain to make an announcement, like big... Idiot!
Can I use the bathroom now? Yes. Am I allowed to get out?
Well, you know,
my seat?
We weren't told we could. The light didn't come on to see we could get up. So we're just gonna. I know I'm starting to get really faint, and but they didn't say we could get up.
You know, I'm such a rule follower. I worried this would happen to me. I don't think it really would. I can't. I mean, obviously, this is a phenomenon. It's not one or two dumb people. I mean, obviously, it's like a psychological thing.
Well, now you know.
I know. Yeah, but I just. Can you imagine just sitting there? I can't imagine that you would just sit there.
I wouldn't.
It's crazy. To overcome the normalcy bias, you need to have an action plan on what you're going to do in the event of an accident every single time you get on the plane. So this is sort of the opposite of what you were saying. Like, they want you to think about this. Know where the exits are. When you've spotted the nearest exit, count the number of rows between yourself and that row. Should it be nighttime or the interior light fails, you won't have to succumb to confusion because you know right where to go.
That's really good
advice. I thought that was really smart.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
I already do that.
You do?
I do that, yeah.
That's so smart.
I also do that at hotels.
You count the...
I count the number of doors to the exit.
Oh.
In case there's a fire and we won't be able to
number
see.
Number of doors to the stairs.
So we can feel it.
God, you're smart.
And I hate that this is just something that comes to me naturally.
It's amazing. You didn't even have to. The art of manliness didn't even have to exist for you to do this stuff. That shocks me. Okay. So let's see. Where was I? All right. Size up the passengers around you to see who could be potential roadblocks to your exit. Oh, that guy looks dumb and slow. If you're traveling with kids, talk to your wife.
All right.
This is the art of manliness.
Yes.
About who will be responsible for which kid in the event of an accident.
You're in charge of all the kids, honey.
Yeah.
I'm going to be moving in front of all of you.
I just picture some man like just picking up fat, slow people and throwing them away so he can make his way out with his kids. Mentally rehearse, quickly springing into action as soon as the plane comes to a stop. Another reason it's important to have an action plan is there's a good chance you won't have too much assistance from the flight crew. One study found that 45% of the flight attendants in survivable crashes are incapacitated in some way. You need to be ready to take action without direction from anyone. Now, I don't know why, because you would think if you know you're going to crash, obviously the flight attendants also sit down and buckle their seats. So I don't know what the difference is unless they don't have time or something. But in any case, don't count on that lady who brings you a Sprite.
Yeah, they might be thinking about their own selves.
Yeah, yeah.
They know they only have 90 seconds.
Right, but it says they're incapacitated, so I don't know. Another thing you can do to overcome the normalcy bias is to read through the safety card as well as listen to the flight attendants when they give their pre-flight safety spiel. Just because you've amassed enough frequent flyer miles to circumnavigate the globe 1,000 times, I'm talking to you, Chris, world traveler.
Yes.
You're definitely not off the hook. You may think you're justifiably confident, but you're probably complacent.
I probably am.
Yeah. In a report published a few years ago, the FAA found that frequent flyers were the least informed on what to do and most susceptible to the normalcy bias in the event of a plane crash. Rereading the safety card will remind you where the nearest exits are and what to do during a crash landing. As you read through the safety guidelines, formulate your action plan. I think that's so smart because you know what? I am guilty of not paying attention.
Nobody does.
But you really need to.
Yeah.
Because it's there for a reason. Okay. So remember the +3, -8 rules. So basically what they said was the first 3 minutes or the last 8 minutes of a flight is when you're most susceptible for a crash.
Okay.
So during those times.
Pay attention.
Don't sleep.
Okay.
Make sure your shoes are on and secured. If you're traveling with your wife or girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or lover.
Oh, gosh. That sounds nice.
Make sure she's wearing flats and not high heels, dumb Dora.
Yeah, Dora. No flip-flops.
It's hard to run in stilettos.
And with mangled toes.
Who's wearing stilettos?
And fire. You don't want your toes on fire.
No.
You got to wear some substantial shoes.
Yeah. You know what I was just picturing was apparently in when they made Die Hard, they had like fake feet for Bruce Willis because he's barefoot for a large part of the movie.
Okay, yeah.
And there's all this glass and shrapnel around.
Oh, okay.
So they made like fake rubber feet or something.
Like shoe feet.
Yeah. Isn't that hilarious?
I want to watch it because I want to see if I can tell feet are fake.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you can, but yeah. Don't drink before getting on a plane, Christine. Okay. Garen.
I won't.
And Gavin also. You want to be fully present in the event of a crash.
Yes. Make sure,
I don't know.
Do you,
I say going down.
It's hard to know what's going to happen. Yeah.
Make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, low and tight.
Okay.
And go over your action plan. Okay. It says you don't need to be paranoid, just vigilantly relaxed.
Yes.
Which is going to be the name.
Find that.
Of your new album. Vigilantly relaxed. Okay. Put on your oxygen mask as soon as it drops. Of course, I always tell you that, right?
Yes.
Airplane cabins are pressurized so you can breathe normally at 30,000 feet. When a cabin loses pressure, there's so little air at high altitudes that getting oxygen to your bloodstream is next to impossible. That's where these masks come in. They pump pure oxygen into your nose and mouth so that you can get the air you need. In an event where the mask drops from above, put it on as soon as it drops. According to passenger studies, most folks think they can survive an hour without a mask after a plane loses pressure. I don't know why they think that.
Oh my gosh.
Why would you? It makes no sense. You actually just have a few seconds. Just a few seconds of oxygen deprivation can cause mental impairment.
I think I've heard stories about when planes have crashed and all the people on the plane lost consciousness before the plane even crashed.
Wow.
Which I think is the way to go. Like,
definitely.
If you're going to go dive deep into the ocean, no one's going to survive.
You don't want to be alive
for
that.
Just let me lose oxygen and be asleep before that happens.
100%.
Right?
Assume the brace position. The idea of brace positions might seem a little silly. Not to me.
No, it seems very reasonable. No,
there's no way that curling up in a ball could help you survive a plane crash, right?
I feel like naturally I'm going to curl into a ball.
Yes, 100%. But research has shown that brace positions do indeed up the chances of survival in an emergency crash landing. The positions help reduce the velocity of your head when it inevitably slams into the seat in front of you.
Ugh.
Moreover, they help minimize limb flailing.
Oh, geez.
I kind of wanted my limbs to flail.
Limb flailing.
You're going to die anyway.
Why is that so funny?
It's so funny. Now I'm picturing Kieran Culkin's limbs flailing.
I almost feel like I want to wear a helmet now when I fly, but right? That might be too extreme.
It might. In addition to assuming a brace position, make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, low and tight, over your lap. They are designed to withstand 3,000 pounds of force, which is about three times as much as your body could handle without passing out.
Okay.
I'm just picturing now these crazy assholes who have been on airplanes lately, you know, with, I'm not going to go in the brace position. Yeah. Fuck you. I'm an American.
I don't need. Yeah. That's
you know what I mean?
The anti-maskers.
Yeah. Okay. Forget your carry-on luggage. Remember the kids. All right. The plane has crash landed and you're still alive. Time to get to those exits as fast as you can. Remember, you only have 90 seconds. Believe it or not, you need to be reminded to forget your carry-on luggage. It will slow you down and block others' escape.
Oh, yeah.
And it may injure you or someone else if you try to get down the very steep inflatable slides with it.
You know that's what's going to kill you is these dummies 100%. Trying to get their big, oversized, big boxy bags. I hate you, person. That's
with guns.
Yes.
I got to grab my gun before I go down the slide.
They're big suitcase full of AK-47s.
Yeah. In your rush to get out of the plane, don't forget your kids. That actually happens.
Oh.
Your brain does stupid things in disasters. Keep reminding yourself, I have kids, I have kids, I have kids. Ideally, you should have a plan with your wife and kids on who goes with who in case of an emergency exit. All right. Here's a little, remember I teased earlier the exciting topic of fabrics.
Can't wait. I love a good fabric story.
So this is before you even get on the plane. Wear tight clothing on the plane. Loose clothes can snag on jagged edges and slow you down. Long sleeves and long pants can protect your skin.
Stevie Nicks, I hope you're hearing this.
She just comes on with 25,000 scarves, a shmata, and a what is feathers. Pashmina, yeah. Wear cotton or other natural fibers, as they don't burn as quickly mm-hmm. as synthetics, which we've talked about before. Wear boots or sneakers. FAA says all seats are equally safe, but a time study in 2015 says the middle back seat. Oh, I'm sorry. This is that. Never mind about that, because we kind of proved that you don't really know where.
I'm going to go. You know what? I'm going wings.
Yeah.
Right by the wings. Exit.
Yeah.
And I think our jumpsuits that we're wearing right now
are
really good outfits.
They are.
For flying. I'm saying. And just for life.
And
but
for, yeah. This is another little good thing. Putting a carry-on under the seat in front of you protects your feet and legs from getting broken.
Ooh.
Which would make escaping harder.
Yes, it would be hard to have two broken legs and try to escape.
That would be really hard.
I feel like it'd be really hard to walk on two broken legs.
I think it would be nearly impossible.
Yes, it would be. And I don't want to have to try to carry my wife with two broken legs.
No. You should put her on the beverages cart.
Mm-hmm.
And then just run over everyone in your way and then take the beverages cart down the slide. Oh, my God, that would be so scary.
Yes, that would be for her.
Yeah. So that's it. That's basically it. Just also, I can't sit on the I pee too much. I can't sit on the window seat ever. I have to sit on the aisle.
Yeah, you got to get be near that bathroom.
I mean, I have, you know, crawled over many a sleepless passenger next to me, but I'd rather just be on the aisle.
You know, though, it's good because now you are going to count how many seats.
Yeah, that's really smart. I really like that.
And you're going to be prepared.
Yeah.
You're going to be in a near an exit, not going to be five seats away from an exit, more right. than five seats.
Right.
So you're going to be ready.
Rows. Yeah.
What did I say?
Seats. That's, I mean, yeah, kind of yeah. makes sense depending kinda on how you're looking at it.
The same thing. So yeah. it's okay that you sit where
yeah.
you sit. I have a question for you.
Yes.
Have you ever seen the movie Alive?
I have not. I know what it's about. And it was a big cultural touchstone when it came out and a big punchline.
But you just didn't see it, or you were like, I don't want to see that?
No, I think I would totally be into watching some Chilean soccer players eating each other. Is that what it was? Were they Chilean?
Ethan Hawke is in it.
Ugh.
That's
the unappetizing
part
to me.
Like, you know, it's funny because Ethan Hawke is kind of our generation's babe, right? From like Reality Bites.
I never got it before
Sunrise, after Sunrise, during Sunrise.
I've never seen the Sunrise movies. I've heard they're very good.
I finally watched them, and you know, I liked them because I like her,
Julie Delphi.
She's a delight, and she does a lot of her own creative stuff. Not into Ethan Hawke either. I don't get it. He's not my thing. I think he's probably pretty talented, interesting guy.
Yeah, doesn't click with me.
Not me either. But anyway, the movie Alive.
Yes.
If you have any fear about flying, it will exacerbate
it. Oh, really?
I think one of the problems for me is when I'm doing something that kind of can give me some anxiety, say flying, if I've seen kind of a movie that has that in it, it will flash in my mind.
Yes.
And so I'll see that plane that it has a very traumatic plane crash scene. Like, it's mm-hmm. very well done and it's terrifying, and I'll see it in my head when I'm in the plane.
Yeah. No, I would watch it. I don't think I would. I don't know why I didn't see it at the time. I don't think it wasn't anxiety. It was just like, maybe it just didn't appeal to me or something, or maybe it was because it was Ethan Hawke.
You might watch it. I don't know. That's all I have to say about that.
I can't wait. That was How to Survive a Plane Crash. When we come back, we're going to find out how to survive your life crashing down around you with the incredibly talented Lori Kilmartin.
I can't wait.
We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world
world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Welcome back to How to Survive with Danielle and Christine. Christine, did you have a good break?
I had a delightful break.
Yeah.
How was yours?
Well, I peed.
I didn't. I'm holding it.
That's weird. I don't approve. I don't like it at all. You're going to make me uncomfortable. It's like when I watch someone working out with their hair down. I don't like it. It's insane.
It's not bad. It's I'm not uncomfortable. I'm quite comfortable.
All right.
In fact.
Well, we'll see about that. what, I'm going to sit on you and tickle
feels
you?
Like a threat.
I don't know. I did. So we just talked about how to survive a plane crash. And now we're going to talk about how to survive when your life is crashing all around you. And our very special guest today, Laura Kilmartin, has an amazing album out called Corset.
It's so good.
It's so funny.
Thanks.
She's a great stand-up comedian. She hosts her own podcast with another one of our guests, Jackie Cation, called The Laurie and Jackie. Is it Jackie?
Jackie and Laurie.
The Jackie. Why did she get top billing?
It angers me every day.
Is it alphabetical?
Yes.
You guys should switch it up. You know, just everybody gets a turn being first.
You're right.
Right?
You're right.
It's called the Jackie and Laurie Show as of this moment. Laurie Kilmartin, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. I feel like I do want to talk fast because I know you have to pee. Like, I don't want to. I'm going to skip some details just
no, please.
Out of
every
respect.
Detail. We can always pause. You know what? I'm also actually wearing a diaper.
It's fine. That's why the jumpsuit.
So you're also an astronaut. I have no idea.
I have to drive across the country and murder someone, I think. Is
stalk
the way
your
it goes. Yeah.
Boyfriend's wife or girlfriend?
Yeah, that's fine.
Wow. You guys really take a dump on love. I have no idea.
I have a question for you before we start. I've always said Kilmartin.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed on your album that you're introduced as Kilmartin. How do you say it?
I don't know. I say it however the MC says it. Is
how you pronounce your last name however someone else.
Yes, yes.
That's how wed to stand-up you are. I don't know. Whoever around me.
Whoever's paying me.
Lisa Kilpatrick. Yes, that's
I'll take it. But how does your family say it?
I guess either way.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not a huge difference, Kilmartin or Kilmartin. It's not huge.
It's not. Just I'm, you know, because everyone pronounces my name wrong. I guess I'm sensitive.
Right. That's nice.
Okay. So as your fans know, as we know, you are a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And walk us through this story of when your life seemed to be crashing around you.
Okay. And before I go into it, my son's father and I are good friends now.
Oh, you are?
We do a lot of stuff with our kids. We went to Morton's for steak last night. It's our son's first like steakhouse.
Oh.
And it was incredible.
Of course, this is where my mind is. Did they card you? Did they vaccine card you?
No.
I don't like that. They should be carding you.
Is that a thing now that they're supposed to do that at restaurants?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Morton's get on it. Come on.
It was a Monday night, so it wasn't packed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm triple vaxxed.
And how does your son's dad feel about him being in your act?
I don't think he listens. I mean, no one in my family does.
Oh, it's like your family,
yep,
Chris.
I can relate to that.
Absolute disinterest or fear that I am going to talk about them, so they don't want to listen at all. My son doesn't. My son just thinks I'm, you know, using him for money.
Oh,
yes. But why do I need money? Is it because I have a son? So
you reap what you sow, kid.
Yeah. So I haven't heard from him. But, you know, whatever. It was a situation presented to me.
Yes.
So as a comedian, I made some jokes about it. But I am like, those jokes are on the album and I'm totally done with that event now. But I'm happy to talk about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right now. So I had a 2-year-old son at the time and was in New York and I had no job and, you know, was running out of money, et cetera.
Right.
And so I got an offer to work on the Bonnie Hunt Show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
which is
yes.
A daytime show here in Los Angeles. And I took it. And it was to write funny advertising. Like, I kind of didn't pay attention to the job.
Okay.
Yes, I'll take it.
You're like, it's money, it's TV.
Yeah,
I'll
it's writer. It. Yeah, whatever. Yes. So I'm like, I'm in. And it's health insurance. And So when I got there, I wasn't writing for the show, really, the comedy on the show. It was trying to write integrations, like product integrations.
Oh, like the advertorials, where it's like, it's an ad, but make it seem like it's part of the show.
Yes,
that's always fun.
Yeah.
You know, to deal with an ad company.
So Chris and I wrote on a show called The Dish. That's how we met.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
And we had to do that.
Yeah.
And they never used one of them.
We had to do it every week.
We had to do that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think they used one.
I think at that time, they didn't know how to do it very well. Like, I know with Conan, it would be like, all right, we have a Snickers integration, and anyone who comes up with a pitch that Snickers likes, you get an extra amount of money.
Okay.
So it was some incentive for the writers. But this is more like, I was sitting in an office with the ad guy. Uh-huh. Like, I wasn't sitting with the writers.
Oh, boy.
And he was like almost cold calling.
No.
Kind of. You know, but it was like, all right, we got a Bush's Baked Beans. For some reason, I remember Bush's Baked Beans because they wanted the dog in it. I forget. It was some sort of link to
Congress
Bonnie
just voted on that, right?
Dog. What?
Congress just voted on that? They just passed the Bush's Baked Beans?
The Baked Beans Act, of 1742.
Very controversial.
Right. But yeah, so it wasn't fun at all, because I didn't know what I was doing, really.
Right.
And also I think she, and every host is allowed, you know, you have your team that you like.
Yeah.
And I was sort of brought in by somebody else and was perhaps looked at as just a, you know, who's this person?
Mm.
Like, I have my comedy team and they're really good and I want them. And I don't know why we have this person here. So there was misery.
Oh.
There was professional misery. But I'm like, okay, I can survive this. It's no big deal.
And it's you and the ad guy.
Yeah, and he was a nice guy.
Right, but
he's
not a comedy person.
No. When he's calling, you know, all day long.
You're trying to figure out what you're supposed to be doing, I'm sure.
Well, listen, here's what I was doing. Because sometime early in the job, like maybe a month into the job, my son's father and my son came out, right? Like, I had to gotten a place on Craigslist at the time for like 6 weeks, and then I found an apartment for 3 months, right? I didn't know how long I was going to be hired, and I never had a good feeling from day one that it would last too long. So I didn't want to do a whole lease or anything.
Didn't unpack boxes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't get too comfortable.
Yes. Yeah. And then, so they come out, and, you know, one thing leads to another, and I find evidence of an affair.
Oh, boy.
Right?
Oh.
So,
While you're by yourself, or
no? After they came out.
Oh, Jesus!
Right.
Okay,
right,
so
before
you...
my son's third birthday, I remember, because we had a very awkward birthday party.
Oh my gosh!
Yes.
So you guys were a couple at this time.
Yes.
You were living
yes.
together in New York.
Yes.
I'm assuming.
Right.
So you're, for all intents and purposes, married. I mean, you're not married, but you're,
and
you've got a kid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And first of all, that must be hard to leave your 2-year-old.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I can't imagine. Okay, so they come out and you're like, surprise, I found out.
Yeah, very quickly. Yes. And so,
good thing you liked your job so much.
I could lose myself in my career.
Yeah.
So he left the place I had gotten, and you know, there was like a lost month, or I don't know where time where I'm like, I don't know if he was just living his car or something. But I also owned most of our stuff. So, like, I kept the car. Like, there was, it was an immediate cutoff of everything. So how I kind of survived, because I didn't have much to do at the Bonnie Hunt show.
Yeah, right.
Besides avoid her gaze.
In both senses of the word.
Yes. Just didn't want her to remember that they'd hired me. You know what I mean? You're like, I'm just trying to stay here.
So you got a frosty feeling from her, or you were just sort of,
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm just picturing the guy on the phone, the ad guy, calling up, you know, Toys R Us and saying, like, well, did you ever see Jumanji? She was in that.
She's a great actress.
No, I love her.
She's hilarious.
I adore her.
Yeah, and she's really good on her show. Like,
okay.
She was a great daytime host, you know?
It's
a crazy difficult market, right? To stay on the air.
Right.
But anyway, I'm just trying to avoid her. And now I was so enraged about this affair.
Sure.
That I start, you know, what you do when someone's cheating on you, you start looking back and going, when this thing happened, was he actually doing this instead of this thing?
Right.
So I'm backtracking, like, I guess over a year and just looking at little incidents. And then because I paid for our phones, I had his phone records. And then I just started, like, matching, you know, phone records, finding out her number, just
doing some detective work.
Yes, major detective work.
Well, you had a lot of time on your hands.
I had tons of time on my hands. All I had to do was tune out Farshad, the ad guy, and I was truly doing some incredible, you know, like, pinning together timelines and stuff like that, so I could really hit with evidence. For I don't know what I thought I was going to win.
I'm picturing like a board from Homeland.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
You know, where you just got the pins going in, the red lines,
strings. Yeah.
Had he denied it, or was this just something you mentally had?
No, it was undeniable.
Oh, so there was really no reason you had to do all this research because he'd already.
No. I wanted to figure out because, like, the entire time he'd been having this affair, our relationship was really bad. And I was like, I couldn't figure out what was happening.
Oh, God.
And maybe my ego's so big, it didn't even occur. Like, now the first thing I would think of is cheating. Like, to my knowledge, I hadn't been cheated on before. Yeah. So I just didn't think that was a thing. And I didn't think he would do that. But now, you know, that would be my number one guess.
Yeah, right.
When someone changes their behavior and their attitude towards you, number one guess is they're cheating on you, even if you think they would never.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I have another question that might be beside the point. But
right.
So he brought your two-year-old.
Yeah.
But he didn't take him back with him when he disappeared for a month.
No. He was, like, in L.A., but he just was, like, I didn't know where he was living and stuff like that. And,
but so what I'm saying is, did you have to find someone to watch your son while you went to work?
My mother came down.
Okay, good. All right. Well, yeah, we all know about your mother, but I guess.
Yeah, so my mother stayed
with me. How much damage can she do when he's three?
I know. So, yeah, so then I was with my mom that one sublet came up and I was still at Bonnie Hunt. So I went to another one and she moved down with me and was in that one with me and my son. And that just like that, oh my God, I can't believe this. Because it's also like one thing is, I'm in a terrible relationship. But the other is, I'm in no relationship and I have a son.
Yeah, with this person.
A three-year-old. And yeah, like now it's like this ugly thing and it's you know, like, what do? I wasn't even going to have a baby in the first place.
Sure.
Now I'm a single mom. This is like my nightmare scenario.
Right. Yes.
Like,
no,
for any woman to be a single mother is not what you want.
Right.
No.
Some people choose it, but it seems super difficult.
Yes. And what you grow up hearing, it's like those are the people that have the toughest times.
Yeah.
I'm doing okay, but at that time I was like, I'm gonna be on welfare.
Right.
You know, I'm you know, this
it's scary.
Yeah, right. So I'm like, I'm gonna go on the road with a kid. I thought our thing was he was gonna watch so it was
that all fell apart. That idea.
Yes. The whole thing fell apart. Yeah. So mm-hmm. So then it just took a couple. Then I was just like, I was in so much rage for like a year. Fury.
Yeah.
Fury.
I can't. I that's why I didn't know that you were like on good terms. I mean, I guess you have to be on some terms when you have a kid. You have to be able to talk or something.
Yeah. I mean, we are. We don't really talk about the past or anything.
Okay.
It's just, you know.
So
our kid's great, so we mostly talk about him.
That's great.
And crypto, of course. anyone who's talking to a comic, you will inevitably talk about crypto.
Really?
Yes. That's most comics are like, that's their
hilarious.
Seems like that's their side gig. It's crypto.
Are you into crypto?
I have been talked into buying a few coins that I've been promised will turn around.
And do they have someone's face on them? Because I heard there's something about they're branded now, like they're fun cartoon, right?
Well, I have some SHIB and
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. It's like an offshoot of Dogecoin.
Oh my
which
gosh.
Itself
this
is
like
is
my
a
9-year-old
joke.
Son right now.
Yes, I know.
He would love to talk to you. He's obsessed with talking about.
He is?
He's like, Mom, do you know about Dogecoin? And I'm like, is this a Minecraft thing? Like,
I got really confused because Dogecoin came into my consciousness at the same time as Doja Cat. So I'm very all over the place.
Yes.
I don't know what either one of them is, by the way. But my husband, I think, has bought some cryptocurrency.
Mine too.
Too.
Yeah.
Okay. See, yeah. I was almost embarrassed to say it out loud. Okay. So going back to the Bonnie Hunt show.
Right.
So what happens there?
Oh, so I think I'd gotten hired like in August, and then in January I got fired.
Oh no!
Right? She saw me in the hallway. like, wait,
you're out.
That girl's still there. Get her
oh,
out.
Oh no!
Yeah.
So did they not need that position anymore? They just didn't need you.
They probably didn't need the position. Yeah, I don't think they replaced the comedy writer integration person.
That must have been scary,
terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, then I'm like, oh, I might have to move back in with my parents and go to law. Like, for some reason, I thought I was going to go to law school.
Oh, yeah,
like, I'm not
that.
Even a college graduate. Like, I'm like so many yes. credits to make up, right? So,
it's so funny that that's the fallback.
I know. So,
okay, I'll go to law school.
I'll do that okay. other thing.
Yeah,
that I don't want to do.
Earn money in 9 years. Yeah, that seems like a good idea, Lori. and so then I did Last Comic Standing.
Okay.
And I got in the top 10. So
yes.
that was something for a little bit.
Do they pay you like per episode? So the longer you stay, the more you
yeah,
get paid?
But I wasn't in many episodes. It was like three maybe or four or something like that.
And were you on a season where they stayed in a house?
No.
Okay.
No. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a huge boon, but it was something. And
okay.
it kind of like got my name out there a little
right.
bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up doing a packet for Conan that
right.
summer and then got hired that like in the following August of 2010, I guess, for Conan. And then that was 10 years.
So that wasn't like, I mean, it was horrible at that moment. But
emotionally horrible.
Yes.
But I had things come up that
yeah, that's fantastic.
Saved me
yes,
financially.
Yes.
But,
okay. So, well, how would you say to survive? I mean, you got two really great breaks. But
yeah.
how did you like emotionally survive? Like, how do you I would say I've never had someone cheat on me because I've never had enough people claim I was their girlfriend for that to be an actual like line that was stepped over. It's like, no, this was always nebulous. Okay. So, how do you deal?
I don't know. It's weird. Like my whole life, I've not been like a girlfriend person. Right.
Okay.
So to me,
yeah.
I was always like comedy's first and you know, we can go out to dinner on dark nights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's when I'm offering you.
Yeah.
And very few people have taken me up on it.
Right.
So
fair loss.
So, yeah, part of me is like, hey, man, I didn't want to do this anyway. And now
yes.
you're cheating? Are
right.
you shitting me? And now I'm one of those women I never wanted to be where I'm mad at my boyfriend. Like, I was just very career.
Right.
And I never wanted to be, I always thought that was like housewife stuff. And this is all, you know, internalized misogyny
sure,
as well. I don't want to be like my mother, you
100%.
Know, dependent on my father. I'm going to be independent and no man's ever going to get his hooks
sure.
on me. And
yeah.
oh my God, one did. And then, you know, it went really, really bad. And
so it feels like a failure of your own character
yes.
at the same time because
yes.
you're like, oh, I'm a stereotype.
I let myself
right.
become that person.
Right.
Yeah.
Without acknowledging like, no, you're just a human being,
yes,
and you
absolutely.
Had feelings for somebody, and you made a beautiful life. And,
yeah,
and you made this wonderful son, and shit happens, and
right.
you're not an automaton.
Automaton. Yeah, automaton.
Automaton. That's hard to say.
Automaton.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I get it because I had the same thing where I was like, I'm not a stereotypical woman, and then it totally backfired because then I felt like I couldn't ask for anything because I was like, I don't want to be a naggy woman. I literally said to a guy, like, don't worry, you don't owe me anything.
Oh my God,
like,
I'm the queen of that.
I would
yes.
say that
yeah.
over and over, thinking it was some sort of empowerment.
Yes.
Like, don't worry, I'm not a woman who needs things.
Yes.
I'm a cool
right.
girl.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, no, dumb shit, you're a human being who's allowed to ask for
yes.
someone to
yeah.
be kind to you.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
So I think we probably had similar, you know, reactions from our parents.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess it was an emotional survival more than anything else, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're still, you know, on good-ish terms.
It's cool. I mean, it's really good for my kid. His father had then gotten remarried.
Oh.
And then divorced.
Oh,
and now,
to that woman?
No, a different person.
Oh, okay.
And then divorced. And so, so he was like kind of living, you're making a face, on the west of the 405. Yes, that face was warranted.
Okay, I thought you were going to say in another state.
No.
Okay.
Well, essentially.
West of the 405 is kind of like another state.
And then after they got divorced, he moved closer to me and was much more helpful and was able to see our son a lot. And then during the pandemic, he moved into my garage, which I had renovated. And so that's where they do their weekends.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, it's cool. So it's really good for my kid. Oh. And, you know, we do family dinners like once a week.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
See, it can work out. But
it
takes time.
The
I
rage. Yeah. I mean, it's like 12 years now.
Yeah.
But the rage was so, I've never been that wounded by another person that I can remember, you know, before, and just wanting to lash out, you know, and I did lashed out, you know, the part of the fury is I can't even have a clean break from this person.
Exactly.
I have to figure out how to be human and have a relationship for at least 15 more years and probably longer. It's not like we're never going to talk again after my son graduates from high school. So that's another thing that makes you angry. I have to keep swallowing this every time I see him. I can't just walk away.
Right.
Yeah.
Does it get easier?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you fill your life with other things and then you kind of forget a little bit and, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ugh. I mean, I've been, you know, devastated by people I was with for 3 months. So I get it. I mean, I understand. It's it's not easy, but you have a wonderful son and
a kick-ass career.
Oh my god, her career.
We'll see. I mean, I'm sort of floating around now.
I think it looks pretty good from where I'm sitting.
100%
successful album, book shows.
Yeah.
And I do get that $3 per download.
Hell,
so I'm pretty excited by that. That is a mortgage payer.
Those $3, you know, add up when it's millions of people.
Oh, I don't know that it is,
but but yes, we want to encourage you guys, please find Lori's album, Corset.
It's so good.
You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on
Amazon.
And it's so funny. And a large part is about her son. And it's hysterical because she has a very, very unique relationship with her son. And, you know, we all sort of feel these things.
But. I love it because I so relate to it. It's that feeling of like I have this a lot where I'll be at the park and there'll be another mom. And she's like, isn't it so fun to watch them play and how they get along? And I'm just like, no, it's boring. Like, I want to look at my phone. And so I love how well you articulate that feeling of just like, yeah, this is kind of boring most of the time.
Yeah.
You do it much better. But it's so hilarious. And I think every...
Yeah.
You can mom especially, but any human being will love it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And you can also see you did Corden recently.
I did.
And it was a great set. And there's one chunk in the Corden set that's on your album. Although it's interesting. I love seeing how things are changed.
Yeah.
I love that. I think it's such an interesting process of like, oh, okay, so she kind of changed that line or she kind of edited that a little bit. I think that's so
that
neat.
That chunk was like, I thought of that ending that week.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I had a different ending for it, and it never felt, it was like good enough, but I was like, yes, it doesn't feel right. And then I was at the Embarcadero because I was at the work recording my album at the Punchline in San Francisco.
Okay.
So I'm and I walk into Ann Taylor and I was like, oh my god, wait a minute.
That's
I tried it
genius
that night. So I had it, but I was very tentative because I was
so
like,
the first time you did it was when you were recording your album.
Well, I was recording it all week, so like the Wednesday Thursday shows I have the old version, and then Friday is when I walked in. And so I tried it on Friday because I'm like, all right, I have the old version, let me just see if this works. And it was working, but you know, it, now like by the time I did it on Corden, I could walk to it with full confidence.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
So it was, I feel like it's a more powerful version of it. But the one on the album's like me going, is this gonna work?
Oh, I mean, I didn't feel that.
No, but I didn't either.
I just meant like some wording was a little different.
But
that's interesting. That's impressive. Well, yeah. Anyway, I don't want to give away what it is, but no. You should listen it and watch.
Like
the
if
Corden
you're a
special.
Person who appreciates, I mean, obviously, if you appreciate comedians and jokes, but like, I feel like you're such a master joke writer.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Like, I'm just always so impressed with your jokes. They're so like surprising, and they go in places I don't expect.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
It's really just such a pleasure to hear this new album.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, nerding out on your.
It was like those things where like they're open ties, and you're like, oh, uh-huh. Those things will never be connected. Uh-huh. And then when I realized it all connected, and then it was Loft, I was like, ah, my God.
It's like, I don't know if you'll understand, if you'll relate to this, but for me, when that happens in writing, it's like math.
Yes.
It's like,
yes.
Oh, it all makes yes. sense. All those parts came
totally.
Together.
Yeah,
and made
yeah,
a
yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I love that.
I love that, too.
Lori, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you,
it was
you
really
guys.
Fun.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It was so quick.
Well, we are such huge fans of yours, and we'd love to have you on again.
Oh, yeah. I'd love it.
For whenever you want to tell another horrifying story that you survived. We can't recommend your album enough and your comedy and all those jokes, monologue jokes you enjoyed on Conan for the last 10 years. Lori had a big hand in those. So that is also where you know her. Writing from.
Thank you.
And
can't wait to see what you do next.
Yes.
Me too. Anyone have any ideas, send them on over.
And we'll be right back with what we've learned today.
Stick around. Welcome back to How to Survive with Danielle and Christine. Danielle, you want to tell us what we learned today?
I would love to.
Great.
Fake it until you make it, to the point you aren't afraid.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not the impact, it's the fire. Young skinny men have the best chance of survival. If they're slow, shove them or help. Sit near an exit within 5 rows if possible. Overcome the normalcy bias. Remember the +3, -8 rule when flying. Be vigilantly relaxed. Minimize limb flailing. Don't forget the kids. And Dogecoin and Dogecat are unrelated.
I'm not sure I believe that.
Now we're going to jump into the segment we call, well, actually, the first one is that Alive is not about a Peruvian soccer team, but rather a rugby team from Uruguay.
Oops.
Yeah. And the second is, a few weeks ago, we were talking about the raccoon invasion with Jesse Gaskell, and I alluded to them writing the musical Rent mm-hmm. and made a joke about that the raccoon then died from AIDS.
Yes.
The creator of Rent did not die from AIDS. His name was Jonathan Larson. I watched Tick, Tick, Boom last night,
you
which
did.
Is about him. Yes. He died from an aortic dissection caused by an undiagnosed Marfan syndrome.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is like, I think in the movie they say it's an aneurysm, maybe just to make it simplified. But I just wanted to, and the whole time I'm watching the movie, I'm like, when does he turn gay? I'm not kidding. I was so confused. First of all, I couldn't believe that the writer of Rent wasn't gay, if you've seen it. And
that is really hard to believe.
I was just so, I was like, oh, so the problems with his girlfriend is that because he's gay, right?
When does he turn
Didn't he
gay?
Die of AIDS? And then I was like, I mean, I know you don't have to die of AIDS. You don't have to be gay to die of AIDS, but still, I mean, like that.
Rent.
Would Rent.
Come on.
So anyway, I apologize to the Larson family for misspeaking the cause of his death. And to raccoons everywhere.
And to gay people, because I don't know, maybe we need to right now.
Right, Gavin? Anyway, we had a great time this week. We hope you did, too.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. Give us 5 stars. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @PodHowToSurvive. Goodbye.
Bye.